consequence of life, what you gon' do? Mempool fees are high, high. Order no, order no, order no. Where does it stop? Nobody knows. It's a revolution, ayy. Bitcoin is the one, no substitution, ayy. Wish you seen you go, be it's order no revolution.
Welcome back to Order Revolution. My name is Shizzy. On this channel, we cover the entire Bitcoin ordinal ecosystem. What's up, guys? We have an amazing show for you guys today. So today we have James Hoff. James Hoff, he's an investor. He's a controller. He's an amazing person. We talked to him. We met him at NFT NYC, and he's like, he's really big into the space, and he loves Bitcoin. And we're like, yeah, we need to have you on the show. And him being with the Ordinals bot and just being a really, big name in the space, because he's from like the outside of the space, right? Former investment banker. His words was recovering investment banker, and he's just one of those guys from the outside looking in and said, I need to be a part of Bitcoin. And that's the people we want to bring to the show. We want to bring people like him to the forefront and really publicize that, like, we have real people, and it's just not Senator Karen would say, hooded figures behind a keyboard, right? So we have real people, and it's amazing. It's amazing to have somebody not hiding their face, right? So, but without further ado, let me bring in my partner, as always, Mr. Iago B. What's up, buddy?
What's up, man?
What's going on? So we're doing things a little different here. We got James Hoft. He's from the outside. What can you tell me about James? I know you've been doing your research.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's just talk about how we met him, right?
Yeah.
Super loud kind of event at the Frogs Party in NYC. We had the pleasure of meeting, Bruffstar? Is that his name?
Yeah, Bruffstar.
I forgot.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bruffstar from OrdinalsBot. And we actually had a collaboration with him, right, with one of our mutual partners. And met him for the first time. And then James kind of follows up behind him and introduces himself. And we have this amazing, I want to say, like, probably 15-minute conversation about, you know, Bitcoin and where it started, where the journey it's been and where it is now, kind of where his thoughts were even like 4 or 5 years ago, and how those kind of are coming to fruition right now. So that was a very interesting conversation. We said, hey, let's get you on the show. You know, when we get back, it's settled in, and we're back and settled in, and we got him on. So excited to have him on.
And we definitely want to do more shows like this. Of like, we did Scree Labs, you know what I mean? Investors in projects. It's nice to talk to people from the outside looking in, not just builders. You know, we talk to a lot of builders on the show, but you know, the real people are the guys who are funding these projects. Without funding, there is no projects, right? Or if they do, they're really halved on what they could potentially do. So having people like James on and Scree Labs on is really big, and that's something we want to continue to do. Have the bigger VCs come in and stuff like that. James doesn't consider himself a VC, but he is somebody who invests in OrdinalsBot itself. So without further ado, let's bring him in. James, welcome to Ordinal Revolution, my friend.
Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Yeah, man.
So I wanted to I want to jump in for a second and just correct you on the VC item there.
sorry.
As I look at my mission as disintermediating the VCs, right? You know, the idea of having the conflict of interest between the capital and the platform and the community, you know, to me is one of the biggest problems in legacy finance. And it's actually one of the things that crypto and distributed ledger, you know, are here to fix. So, you know, VC, that's transitory history. Future is using the community and using the technology to crowdsource so that the token holders represent the investors and participants and beneficiaries of the systems.
So, so what would have been the proper way to introduce you then?
Okay. Oh, I don't know.
the guy. He's the guy. No.
The dude.
The dude. That's a good one. Right. But, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because and when Shizzy was introducing you, I could tell he was struggling a little bit with like VC, not VC, because the conversation we had, I've never had that conversation with VCs, honestly.
Yeah.
A lot of times they're from like a high level understanding of the space, but what you were talking about was the state of Bitcoin, how you can utilize it at its like most potential, and you knew the space. So that's why I felt like, okay, this guy's different, there's a little spin on it. And with that being said, you know, could you kind of give a bit of your background, going as far as you can, and then leading up to how you found Bitcoin, crypto, and you know, where we are today?
Well, my kids will say I started before there was electricity. So, you know, when I had the abacus, you know. If you put all this into context, I was an investment banker focused on China and Latin America and the emerging markets in the 1990s. And I was lucky enough to take public the first company in China to list on the New York Stock Exchange, which had no precedent and was illegal in both countries. But it was supported by both governments. They just wouldn't tell you that. And so I kind of learned about cognitive dissonance, about the difference between the signal and the noise. And then as I went through China and Latin America and Eastern Europe and Russia, I started to realize that there were patterns, and I wasn't the only one. There were a lot of famous economists, you know, at famous schools writing stories about how markets develop. And they started to recognize this boom and bust and fear and greed cycles, and how an initial asset would come out, whether it's the telecom company or the shipping company or one of the other companies from these countries, and that would be the lead bellwether. That would be, you know, Petrobras, would be the petroleum company in Brazil, or it would be Chinatel, you know, which would be the Chinese telephone system. And that would gain, you'd find out that there was a pent-up demand and all these investors flooded into it because there was no other way to participate in China other than owning Chinatel, right? And so what happened was in all these markets, the initial one goes way up and then gets overbought and dumps whatever one realizes it was over. And then it goes back up again, this time higher, but with two or three companies. And then it dumps again, and you keep going through this until it kind of evens out, and then turns into a curve that turns into an emerging market. So when you're in the middle of these gyrations, you're thinking, "Oh my God, this is huge! You know, these are like, you know, life-defying gyrations." And then when you look at the long-term thing like this, and you go back to that point over here where it was moving around in ways that you couldn't, you know, that you were getting nauseous watching the lines, you realize you can't even see those gyrations. You can't even see those changes because they're so small compared to the growth in the long run. And so humans always look at what's in front of us, and we, you know, and we're in the moment. It's very hard to really look forward accurately and even look backwards. And so, you know, we get caught up in where we are now, but the truth is objectively, you know, it's just a curve going up in most of these markets. And so I recognized that was repeating. And then I said to myself, is that about emerging markets? And I said to myself, no, it's actually about what we now call blue ocean opportunities. Now, Seth Godin hadn't written the book yet. It was about 7 years later. But, you know, blue ocean opportunities is about how humans behave in these opportunities where all of a sudden you have just blue sky and just your imagination. And that's boom and bust and fear and greed. And so I realized in 96 that the big emerging market in my life was going to be the impact of the digitization of information on humankind and on business models. Because you're not going to have to move things around. Everything becomes malleable. Everything becomes interchangeable. It becomes the input for everything exciting that's been happening over the last 20 years. And so I started focusing just on those businesses. And back then, it was interesting. You know, the cell phones were like this big, and they had to fit in your car trunk. So no one's ever going to use, you know, cell phones because they're too big and too expensive, you know, and Amazon's never going to make it because they don't make a profit. Right. And no idiot's going to put their credit card on the internet. What are you, stupid? Right. And voice over IP is never going to work because it sounds shitty. Did you listen to it yesterday? Right. And all these things, I started to realize that all that naysaying and all that negativity, all what we call now FUD, right, was basically the precursor to huge alpha. Right. And that if you want to get the huge alpha, you have to find out where the people are saying no the hardest, because when those people turn, they turn the hardest. Right. And so I started to understand that those no's that were scaring other people away in the classic investment world were actually the signposts for me for what I should be pointing to look at for where the growth is going to be. And then once you start to get the mass adoption, you have to realize that's when that growth stops, and you have to start looking to the
new one.
For the next one. And so I've kind of been, you know, doing the hunt for the next big thing since 1996 in Pell Capital. And that took me through e-commerce, that took me through the internet, that took me through cell phones, that took me through the aggregation of cable service, that took me through the financial problems in 2008, the introduction of Bitcoin, the rise of distributed ledger, right? And so that's all been this trend, you know, where Ordinals now is just another stop on this you know, on this evolution, which is, you know, which is what our conversation was about, you know, at that bar, that fateful evening.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. I love everything that you just said, because I love having these type of conversations to where you can kind of forecast and then you get ahead and then you look for the next thing, right? So one thing that I like to compare, like the whole Bitcoin and crypto markets to from past phases of innovation, technology, is the internet. Obviously, that's an obvious one. But a lot of people, younger people especially, don't realize that there was lobbyists in Washington, D.C. for the media companies that were totally against the internet because they realized what was to come. And that's kind of what we're seeing with bankers as well. But with this transition in emerging market, like Bitcoin came out in 2009. We're at 2024 now. Where do you see we are within this emerging market? Because like someone like you is probably already starting to look at the end of the line and what's the next thing, right?
Well, it's interesting. First of all, there's never, not to undersell where we are now, right? There's never been an asset that came out in 15 years, you know, represented, you know, $1.5 trillion of value, and it touched as many people. The distributed ledger blockchain is growing much faster than any of the previous, you know, technologies that came around: cell phones, cable service, the internet, e-commerce. You know, each one of those had a hockey stick up that was faster and faster and faster, and nothing's been faster than, you know, than Bitcoin. Right. Yeah. And now you have Ordinals, which just came up, and they are growing fast. They grew faster than everything. You know, you have millions of users in 1 year. Right. It's crazy. And so where I see us right now is kind of like the first inning. You know, we're not even really at mass adoption. And the reason we're not at mass adoption, again, is something which I believe in fractals. This stuff, the more people try and convince you things are different, the more you should roll your eyes and walk away and realize it's all the same, right? And it's all the same because humans participate in all this stuff. And so, you know, we do the same thing every time. We're predictable, you know, as a herd. And so the thing that about technology is that all the technologists and most people you bring onto the show who are builders, who I admire and think are fantastic, you know, they think the tech matters. And okay, here's my first, you know, someone's going to throw a shoe at me moment. The tech doesn't matter. Okay. What matters is the community. What matters is how many people are using it. How often are they using it? Is it habituated into their daily activity? And how high value is that transaction that they're doing in, you know, in absolute and relative terms, right? That's what makes technology valuable. You could have the most brilliant technology. If you don't have an audience and you don't have people using it, it doesn't matter. It doesn't, right? And by the way, the best technology does not win. The technology that gets the most people the fastest and gets everyone's mind share, that's the one that wins, right? And so, you know, where I think we are right now is that we're just settling on, okay, maybe Bitcoin's different, right? And gee, why is it so hard to use, right? And that's true in the Ethereum world and the Bitcoin world. It's still not good enough, right? We use, you know, in your iPhone, there's tens of thousands of protocols. You can't name any of them, and yet you really enjoy your cell phone on a daily basis, right? And so as long as we're in distributed ledger and the decentralized space, and you need to know that it's Solana this, and you know this one's ARC20, and this one's BRC20, and oh, you can't wait till Rune comes out because that's going to change everything, right? That's, you know, while everyone's really excited about it and we're talking about their size of their mempools, right? The truth is nobody gives a shit outside of this small little community. And actually, that's, to me, very dangerous to these valuations that we have right now, because those valuations are supported by a very small community. And that community is buying and selling from itself, in a lot of ways, creating its own price discovery without any real authentication outside. And so I think we're actually at a moment where I would be, let me put it this way. I was booed out of NFT.NYC 3 years ago at the height of the Bored Apes Yacht Club, because I was on stage talking about investing in NFTs and in distributed ledger. And someone, a very proud owner of an ape, stood up and, you know, with a lot of ego, expecting it going from 2 to 40, because that's the obvious place where it's going, is to $40 million an ape, you know, and asked me, you know, with his ape now worth $2 million, you know, what would he advise me to do in his investment strategy to acquire more apes? you know, and I said to him, if I had a 96 pixel image of an ape that someone was willing to pay me $2 million for, that I would sell it to him immediately. and that caused all kinds of problems, like physically my getting out of the stage without being mauled. But guess what happened to the prices of Bored Ape tokens?
Down only from that point.
Right. And so, you know, I'm not saying we're at that point with ordinals, and I'm not in any way, but you have to understand, if history, you know, if history doesn't repeat itself, it certainly rhymes, right? Yeah. And so, you know, I would be paying a lot of attention to, you know, my liquid wealth and balancing out right now, and always looking forward to the next thing. So right now, I think we are very early. I think the technology, especially around Bitcoin, if we're going to talk about ordinals, et cetera, is incomprehensible, that every time you press a button, you think you're going to lose everything. Right? I mean, it's reality. Like, did I send the inscription? Did I send the token? Oh my God, what did I do? You know, I think it sent to the wrong wallet, right? You know, each address only has three wallets, right? So it's like, you know, crazy.
Not ideal for mass adoption.
No. I mean, mass adoption has to be a shiny thing on your phone. And when you press the button, something cool happens that you show the guy next to you, and he'd go, oh, that's cool, show it to me, right? That's what we need. And we don't have that. And, you know, I love art. I have family members that are artists. I studied art history in college. But, you know, I don't think the fact that an art is digitized or available on an NFT or a ordinal actually changes the art. We had digital art for decades before now. And the idea that now you can see it on your phone, to me, is not that much different. It adds some liquidity to it. It adds maybe some provenance to it and some other features that you can do. But I'm not a big believer that it changes, you know, its value just by being attached to an NFT or an ordinal. And so I think that these are growing pains. I think we're in an early phase. I don't think the real use cases have come up yet. That's kind of where I would like the conversation to go, is, you know, where the use cases are going to be. And so, you know, what's interesting about distributed ledger is all of a sudden we have liquidity, right? The real thing that's interesting about all this technology, when you get rid of the tech and get rid of the rest of the crap, is you have transparency and you have certainty and you have liquidity, right? And those are the things that are going to change everything. Because right now, we're, you know, information and how we hold and move things is obfuscated by the system, by lawyers, bankers, and accountants who insist on telling you what you can do and telling you if it's appropriate. Right, and telling you how you do it, and then telling you how much it costs, and then telling you if you're even allowed to own the asset, right? And I kind of call BS on that, right? And then certainty, right? You don't own your money in the bank. You don't own the land that you have. Anything that you can be separated by force from, you do not actually own, right? And so if you read all these fine print, and you read your bank account, and you read all these ways that you own things, you don't own them, right? And that's a new change again. Coming in, and then liquidity, right? How can I sell it? I mean, the idea of how you have to sell your house, and you have to talk to the lawyer, and you have to talk to the accountant, then you have to talk to the real estate broker, and then you have to get the recorded, and you have to do all these things. It's purposely just to leave someone else in control of the asset that you thought that you owned. So all of a sudden, if we can abstract out ownership and have a transparent and certain way to move it, you know, electronically without intermediaries, you know, boom. That's a big change in the world, right? And that changes a lot. The World Bank did a study, or the World Economic Forum, one or the other, basically talking, why are the second and third worlds having so much trouble joining into the economies and filling in the wealth gap, which is getting worse, not better, over time, right? And their number one answer was that it's almost impossible for someone in the third world to participate in the financial system of the first world. You can't get an identity. You can't get a bank account. You can't get authenticated to do a deal. And most likely, your region is banned from doing the transaction in general or from holding U.S. dollars, right? And so if someone could come up with a transparent, global, apolitical form of value which could be transmitted without authority, without approval in cell phones, wow, that could change the world, right? I wish someone would come up with that, right? And that's what the system is fighting right now. And so I think we're on the edge of those tools being more broadly distributed. And that the things that we talk about on shows like this, they're just tools. right? They're not the end. The end isn't Bitcoin. The end isn't the internet. The end isn't, you know, distributed ledger. The end is self-sovereignty, permissionless transactions, certainty, transparency, and the ability to deal peer-to-peer without, you know, without the need for centralized authorities to approve or protect the parties. Yeah. And I think we're, I think we are on the edge of that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing points. Yeah. Amazing points. One of the things that you said was that, you know, the wealth gap, and this is something that can help close that, right? Because at the end of the day, the second and third world countries are always going to remain second and third world countries until they can get more on an even playing field. And this is what, you know, ledger technology can do, I think, is what you're trying to say. I don't know. Am I wrong on that?
Well, the question is, you know, who's they, right? You have to be careful in those kind of statements. Right? Do they want the second and third world countries to be equal? Do they want income equality in the United States?
Top 1% definitely doesn't.
Exactly. Right. And, yeah. And who do you think, you know, powers the governments of the first world?
Top 1%.
Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of our system is built to maintain the status quo, you know, on all kinds of ugly levels, you know, racial, economic, religious, educational, you know, gender, right? All these things, you know, are you know, inscribed in our DNA, and these new ideas of freedom and equality and transferability and self-sovereignty, you know, they're in many ways offensive to the existing systems.
Yeah.
Yeah. You really broke it down really well. I mean, all the way from the beginning when you talked about, you know, like Jamie Dimon's biggest point is like, I'm not bullish on Bitcoin. I'm bullish on blockchain. Well, you just came out and you said, no, it's the community that chooses the technology, not the technology chooses the community. So you killed his argument right there with that, which was, I thought was absolutely perfect. And then to your point later, you know, it is all about that, man. Like, really, it's taking something like a ledger and giving it into people who don't have the voice, right? Giving it to the small person, the person who all they have is a cell phone, and now they can send without having a bank account because everything's going digital. There's no more dollars anymore. Like I don't even know when the last time I even went to an ATM, right? Everything's digitally, and now it's really giving it to the people who don't have a voice, who don't have a bank account, who can't get a bank account. I mean, even when I was younger, I wasn't able to get a bank account because I had no damn money, right? So now it's really giving those people a voice, and that's what this is, right?
Right, and I think that ordinals, you know, just to bring it back to the conversation about ordinals, are an important part of that journey. So, you know, a year ago, I had never heard of ordinals, a year and 2-3 months, and my friend Toby Lewis had just met Bruffstar and was, you know, telling me about this thing he found. He doesn't know what to do. And about two sentences in, I said, Toby, calm down. I'm going to be your first investor and lead advisor because, you know, I think you actually have the tiger by the tail. And the reason that I had that decision was that for about the last 5 or 6, so I'm the co-founder of Crypto Mondays. We didn't discuss that, but it's the largest, you know, decentralized meetup globally for crypto. Founded in 2018 with Lou Kerner. And we're in about 70 cities, in about 30 countries around the world now. And so I've been focusing on, you know, on community building within crypto and within Bitcoin, since 2016. And one of the things that two things I've been talking about during that period, which kind of, you know, always got me, you know, strange looks from people from the legacy world, and kind of confused looks from people who wanted to believe but weren't sure. And so one of those was that Bitcoin is the perfect way to store and move electricity. And so people look at it like, oh, I don't understand, well, you know, whatever. This isn't that deep a thought, right? The cost of Bitcoin, the value of Bitcoin is the difficulty expressed in the cost of electricity of generating it. That's the value of Bitcoin, right? And so if you're a third world country and you're long sun but have very little, you know, physical product to sell, you could put up solar farms and mine Bitcoin and use use satellites to deliver that to the first world and essentially be importing your sun, your cheap electricity, into the first world, and create a stream of income for your country, which very well could underpin something like UBI,
universal based income.
Yeah. Someone cue the snare drums or something. but essentially, you know, everything that was supposed to happen with the export of energy in terms of oil and gas, you can do the same thing with Bitcoin, a lot cheaper. and in a digital form that would be perfectly set up for some kind of automatic distribution to, you know, to the country. So that's the first. And the second thing that I saw coming from 2015 is that everyone keeps wondering, you know, oh, Bitcoin, you know, it's not real. It's never going to be able to overtake the dollar, et cetera. And it's not tangible, so it's not going to have value. But they kind of missed the point. So there is a killer app for the Bitcoin blockchain, and that is Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the killer app. Right, just like the stable dollar might be the killer app actually right now for the EVM world, but the value of the blockchain actually I think is going to exceed just its application as money. The Bitcoin blockchain is the largest, most secure, most transparent, non-transmutable database ever formed in the history of mankind. There's never been an apolitical database or source of truth, which has been formed in an apolitical manner, which is owned by its users and not by some political force, and where it's completely algorithmically driven, so you can actually see everything that happens. And that, I believe, is actually the most important aspect of the Bitcoin blockchain. Now, right now, we have a problem with truth. Right, everyone calls this the post-truth world. Right, is Russia right or wrong? Is Ukraine right or wrong? Who's right in the Middle East? Right, is something black or is it brown? You know, am I the aggressor or am I the defendant? Right, you just can't tell anymore. And so, what we need right now is the ability to start understandings and agreements, and to bring in the third world and make it flatter so that anybody can start an agreement. And that's where Bitcoin blockchain comes in. Is you can be able to go in, and that's where ordinals come in, because ordinals basically enable you to take an individual data point on this immense data chain and be certain that something is zero or one, that you can have the beginning of an agreement, and you can codify it and stamp it and make it non-transmutable in perpetuity, so you can always tell where this agreement started. And without the starting point for agreements, you can't have agreements. So I believe that ordinals and inscription and insertion of data into this blockchain is actually going to be the cornerstone of a new political economic understanding globally, as people start to join that community where they no longer need third parties to ascertain certainty, for the beginning of transactions. And then you'll see L2s in EVM and in Bitcoin world and all these other places that will basically anchor on Bitcoin and then go do whatever they need to do elsewhere. So you can have speed and throughput, and usability with this seal of veracity of being anchored in the Bitcoin blockchain.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I actually share that same view with you. I think that's definitely a possibility for our future here. Let me ask you a question. Would voting be an example of what you just talked about?
Ooh, that's a good hot topic right there. So absolutely, yes, except that what is more political than voting, right? Without giving away my political sway here, who's been gerrymandering the hell out of our system for the last 50 years so that a smaller and smaller minority can control, you know, the majority on more and more important and personal issues? Can't imagine. Who could that be?
Yeah.
Right? They don't even want to have mail-in votes, right? They want to have, you know, one white guy with gray hair and a swastika. He's the only guy that can vote, right? So, and I don't know who I'm talking to here, but I love everybody, right? I'm just saying that, you know, very hard to change voting. So there's already systems in place which could fix all the problems we have. But the reality is certain parts of our political system don't want everyone to vote. Right. And actually, our system wasn't really set up as a democracy. It was actually set up as a participatory republic. Right. So that everyone wouldn't vote because, you know, those people in the fields, you know, we don't want them voting. Right. Which is kind of where we are now, oddly enough. You know, I think that voting 100% should change, could change, and would change, but it isn't going to change anytime soon.
Yeah. I think the verification too on that would be difficult because that's why they always try to incorporate the, you know, identities and stuff like that. But other than voting, right, it seems like from what you've given us so far, which has been really great. It seems like you're in this mentality of like, you know, JPEGs and fungible tokens are cool. It's a good thing to start like with ordinals, but there's like a bigger picture here is what you're seeing. So what would you see like, you know, a legit business model come out of this other than like, you know, obviously ordinals bot and some of these servicers are our business models, but like something that's more mainstream, like, is there something that you have in mind?
Well, I see it in phases. And so the first phase to me is the picks and shovels for the actual activity that we're talking about, which is why Ordinals bot and Rune and BR20, you know, BRC20 are all important, because what I do is I look at, okay, I think the world is going over here. If I'm right, between here and here, a whole bunch of things have to be developed and be available and possible before you can actually be here. Right. And so looking forward, you know, if we didn't have Inscription and we didn't have BRC20, we couldn't be talking about any of this stuff. Right. Now the next step is. And so I like to invest in those things because I don't know which app is going to win. I don't know which one is going to get the public favor, but I know they're going to need bandwidth. They're going to need compute. They're going to need, you know, some form of protocol. Right. They're going to need, you know, VPN. They're going to need storage. Right. So first you invest in those things. I think we're still in that phase. In the Bitcoin development, you know, in the Bitcoin economy ecology cycle. So I think the things that are important that are going to come around is first and foremost the thing that gets overlooked is identity, right? You can't really do anything without identity. You know, even if it's your avatar or a wallet, there has to be identity. And so I think that we're going to start to fix how we remain anonymous, but on the other hand, are able to extend control and enjoyment over wallets and avatars using, you know, some form of identity management. And that would be tied into some way to control your data so that you're no longer feeding your data in a fire hose to Twitter and to Reddit and to all these other companies that then take it and turn them into billion-dollar businesses, right? That's your money. That's your ID, right? And you should have the right to be able to benefit from it. So I think you're going to start to see platforms come out around social media and around payments, which enable you to maintain some level of anonymity, but also have liquidity and access, you know, to it. So I think DeFi, you know, is good, and ID are going to be the first two big things. I also think that we desperately need social media platforms that are not centralized and where our data isn't owned and used against us. And then I think, you know, businesses like all the two-sided marketplaces out there, you know, Uber and you know, and food delivery, et cetera, those things also, you know, are going to start to benefit from peer-to-peer. And the real place it's going to have value is that we pay huge rent to these centralized entities for the service they provide to us, which is really aggregating the marketplace. And we don't really need them to do that, right? They don't want to give it up, but we don't need them to do that. And so I see all these two-sided marketplaces as being ripe for disruption by decentralized platforms that can essentially, you know, Web 1 was you pay for it, right? Web 2 was they tell you it's free, but really the cost is your freedom, right? And your privacy. And Web 3 is you can be anonymous. And by the way, you can benefit from the growth of the platform, you know, by being a token holder and by being part of the community. You can actually, the more you participate, the lower it costs you and the better the experience. And so I think that that's the direction we're going in.
Yeah, that's another form of universal basic income too, right? Selling your data.
Wait, that could potentially, I didn't hear that. What?
Universal basic income. That's selling your data.
Turn off your electricity. Be careful.
No, but I'm just saying, like, so there's so many forms of UBI that could be created by ordinals and by Bitcoin that's just there and waiting, not to mention, you know, putting it you know, something on your roof that generates Bitcoin, you know, takes in the energy of the sun, generates Bitcoin, UBI, and then selling your data for other things, which is another version of UBI. So yeah, I definitely,
so we, especially in the United States, we're stuck on this, you know, Protestant work ethic, which really worked, you know, for centuries, right? But right now with AI, you got to restart rethinking this stuff. This we've been talking for decades about what's going to happen as we become more efficient. What's going to happen to, you know, to people? You know, we're already down to like a 4-day work week. People don't go to the office anymore, right? This is changing, and the system doesn't want this to change. But the reality is that, you know, UBI shouldn't be a dirty word, right? And if AI is going to do more and more, we need to, we're either going to harness all this power and generate wealth that can be shared and sustain humanity, or we're going to have a big freaking problem, right? Right now, Google just wrote me a note yesterday. They have this new thing, help me write. And so would I sign up for it? And I'm looking, I'm thinking to myself, okay, so I'm going to put Google help me write into my Gmail, and I'm going to send Shizzy an email. Okay, actually, Google's going to do it. And he's going to have the same thing I have. So he's going to press a button. Google's going to respond to it. And then Google and, you know, my Google and your Google go back and forth, have a nice conversation. We could be out, you know, surfing. You know, who the fuck needs us? Excuse my friend. Right? And so, you know, and then that, and then it's fractals. Everything is fractals, right? So pretty soon, companies will have bots, you know, that respond to everything you're supposed to, you know, whether you want a service call, you want to go, you know, want to fly, you want to make a hotel reservation. Well, I'm going to tell my Morpheus AI bot to talk to your self-sustaining LLM about it. And, you know, my computer is going to talk to your computer. And again, you know, this, we're not doing it anymore. And so we got to find a new use for ourselves and a new way to pay ourselves, you know, and start to understand, you know, historically it was easy to see where we fit in between the rock and the iron hammer, right? And then it was harder to see where we fit in as everything moves forward, you know, and, you know, you used to carry your kids on your back. Then you found a sled. Then you had a wheel. Then you had a wagon, right? And so if the purpose of dad was to carry around the kid, well, then after you had a wagon, what do you need dad for? Right. And so this is something that's been happening over time that we're uncomfortable with. But I, you know, my view is we better really start thinking about it because, you know, AI is going to eat just like software and every other revolution. It's going to eat the world. It's going to affect everything. When I was entering investment banking in the 1980s, the first personal computer was put on the desk my first year there. And the senior guys had no idea what to do with them. But we junior guys were supposed to use them immediately and all of a sudden be able to do infinite modeling instantaneously, you know, as opposed to the literally pen and paper that we were doing for models, a week before. And it turns out these things were so slow, right? I mean, you have to turn calculate off because you couldn't manipulate it with calculate on, because every time you pressed a button, we try to recalculate the whole thing. And you have to wait 30, 40 minutes and you couldn't stop it. Right. Real models would take hours to just, you go to lunch. And then the senior guy would walk in like an idiot saying, I need the 16 iterations on. And I'm like, that's great, because it's still calculating from when I put my name on the upper right hand corner. Right. But back then I had to learn, you know, about a computer, and I had to learn about what was then Lotus 1-2-3, and you used to do your graphics in a different program, and then you'd combine them in a third program to make a presentation, and it was impossible. It was completely impossible, right? Then, you know, Excel came around and it does charting as well as the thing, and it's a little bit faster. Oh my God, this is amazing. Now with AI, like, I was sitting next to a woman at a conference last week, and she's sitting there building a spreadsheet, and I was like, what are you doing? Go to ChatGPT and tell it you want a spreadsheet incorporating all the data from the last 3 years of that company, you know, and ask it what all the multiples are against the publicly traded companies, you know, and press a button. And so she's sitting there slaving away. I typed in, you know, 6-line prompt into ChatGPT, and while in a conference, gave her the entire analysis she was doing, right? So you don't need to know how to use Excel or a computer anymore. You need to know how to operate an LLM prompt, right? Yep. And so that's how the world is changing. You don't need to know language. Like, I drag and drop whole documents now into ChatGPT and say, A, translate it, and B, please give me a summary, you know, on one page or less, so I don't have to read this damn thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, scary, kind of. It's scary, but it's also like, you know, learning. You gotta learn to work with innovation as opposed to against it. The only thing is that, like I don't want to get too into like, you know, political theory or even like a government style theory or anything, but like capitalism, I'll say it short, like works very well for like a new foundational country that's growing. But once you're like at like your peak, capitalism can lead to like more greedy, right? Being more greedy. And that's where I see like AI is like, they're going to look at it as, how can I be efficient? How can I cut costs? And that's where, you know, some of these people are going to have to learn how to be useful again, like you said. But hopefully, I don't know, maybe we can roll ordinals into this somehow and then one day like utilize it with AI models and stuff like that. We'll see.
I think ordinals will absolutely be involved. You know, in to me, the future revolves around distributed ledger, robotics, and AI, right? And so distributed ledger is how you move information around. AI is how you manipulate it. And robotics is how you implement it into the real world. Right. And I think that those are going to be three legs of the stool as we move forward. You know, sticking on ordinals, ordinals is a really important development because it makes the attributes of the Bitcoin blockchain accessible and usable to the mass market. Right. Politically, to go back to your political point, capitalism works much better in a growing market because you don't have to compete for every unit of growth. Right. In a shrinking market, all of a sudden you have to compete for every unit. Right. And historically, capitalist markets don't do well during deflationary periods.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. So kind of getting past that a little bit, though. But like, let's just, do you think Bitcoin can do everything it needs to do now with the way it's set up? Or do you think we need like an opcat, or we need some kind of upgrade to really bring Bitcoin into ordinals a little better? And if so, do you think like the higher powers now, the Larry Finks of the world, are never going to want to upgrade this ledger that they're putting so much money into?
So I have mixed feelings on that. I have a lot of friends that are maximalists, yeah. And believe that it's a feature, not a bug, that Bitcoin only did one thing. And we're actually disappointed by the introduction of ordinals and BRC20, et cetera, because you're fucking it up, right? Mm-hmm. It's there, it's pure, it does one thing, you know, it does that thing elegantly and well. You know, why kick the bucket now? Do we really need this? Ethereum looks fine to me, right? And so that's definitely out there. And I have a bunch of friends, you know, who have believed that for a long time. I think over last year, some of them have softened a little bit, but maximalists don't really change their stripes. And they might be right, by the way. One of these changes could be catastrophic, right? One of them could cause the, leakage of memory that shuts down the chain or enter a virus I'm not saying that I'm technical enough to know how, but certainly the more diverse you become, the more open you become for viruses. Having said that, the more diverse you become, the more you become protected against some viruses because of that diversity. So I do think that there's a chance that we take some wrong turns, like nothing's going to be perfect. And that one or two of the turns might slow down the blockchain or might cause fees to blossom and get out of control or have some kind of unintended consequence. So that certainly is a risk that we're taking. And with a market that's worth over $1 trillion, you know, you don't take that lightly. It's touching a lot of lives. There's a lot of wealth and a lot of people's livelihoods that are now tied into this blockchain, so you want to be careful with it. But having said that, very few things live in a vacuum and are able to have the luxury of not changing over time. And it's human nature to tinker, right? I always say, when you tell me anything about tech, even though I don't really understand the tech itself, I immediately go off on some fantasy vision of, if you can do this, then you can do that. And then you can do this, then you can do that. And it's really fun until I start telling it to my friends who are doing the technology, who are like, oh my God, you know, that sounds like a lot of work. Or whenever anyone tells me you can't do that or it's not going to happen, I know I'm just talking to the wrong person. Because once you're in the digital domain, you can do anything. You just have to figure out how to get there. And so I think that I hope that the core nature of Bitcoin and the Bitcoin blockchain is never disrupted. You know, the non-transmutability, the transparency, the permissionless environment, right?
Security,
right? You know, those things, the peer-to-peer nature, those things, I would hate to see those change, and I think that that would be a loss for humanity. And so I think it's important that these decisions stay in the hands of the community, and that we avoid the tendency of cabals and star chambers, to come around to start to bend these platforms for their own good, and that we can keep moving forward with Bitcoin as an arbiter of truth without trusting, and that we can use it for the common good, to level the playing field. But that doesn't mean that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. So I guess my last question would be, are you worried about Larry Fink potentially buying up all the miners? He buys Mara, he buys this, he buys that. He owns now 51% of Bitcoin hash power, right? Is that something that because, I mean, he owns 40% of the S&P. Why can't he own 51% of the miners? And they're, most of them are public, the bigger ones anyway. Are you afraid of that in any way?
Interesting. So it's so funny because when Bitcoin first started, everything was 51% attack, and you only need $1 billion, and this is less than some guy's car, right? And we had to trudge our way through that, and it was always a fear, and then we burst our way out, and now we're kind of back to that point
back again, to it.
Right? Which is kind of interesting. So I don't think that that's an insidious plan. I'm not really a conspiracy theorist. Is it possible? It's more possible now with that advent than it was before. But I actually have a different perspective. I think the ETFs are a huge mistake. And because they are antithetical to the whole, DNA of Bitcoin and decentralization. Right. And so to have these large pools, to me, what it actually represents is a different is a different danger, and I'm not in any way belittling the one you pointed out, because it's actually interesting. But how about this? People tell you that Bitcoin and ordinals and crypto, they can't succeed, right? Unless there's more and better regulation, right? And I think that is like a silly statement. These things never would have existed if it wasn't for the fact that there were problems in regulation. That's the whole point of Bitcoin. If you read the white paper, right, it's a political manifesto telling you, look out, everything's too centralized, right? And regulation isn't working. You need to have some money off the grid. You need to have your relationships and your value and our history off the grid, because the victor writes history, right? Mm-hmm. And so to me, to tell people you're safer if you're doing things that are regulated, I don't believe that's true. I think you're actually more endangered. The first place that the regulators are going to go when they decide they've made a mistake and they want to make an example is going to be to regulate those people that agreed to be regulated, because they're already on the list. There's already a button they can push to screw them over, right? And so to me, the last place I would keep my Bitcoin is in a centralized repository that reports to the U.S. government. Right? Because when the U.S. government decides that Elizabeth Warren is right and there's going to be a run on the Bitcoin bank, whatever the hell that is, right? They're going to do what they do. They're going to call responsible citizen Jamie Dimon and responsible citizen Larry Fink, and they're going to tell them, you really should shut those things down for the benefit of America, because America, right? And please shut down. Give us the keys. Give us the names, phone numbers, and social security numbers of every person that's participated, and we'll take care of it. Don't worry, we're in charge now.
Yeah,
right.
We saw it happen with gold, right, in the past, where they if you didn't give up your gold, you were in trouble. So it's scary.
It's happened in countries around the world. It's happened in the United States several times, actually, not just once. And so to me, that's a huge danger. I actually think that's a feature, not a bug, everyone who holds their Bitcoin on a ledger, because when they take back that 20-30% the U.S. government, which I think they will at some point, I think all the Bitcoin on ledgers is going to be a lot more valuable.
I agree. And but there is one thing you forgot to like mention is like the power of forking, right? Do you think the power of like, so they always have to be like, okay, yeah, we own all these hash powers, like, and everything, we own all the Bitcoin, but now they just forked it and we don't own nothing anymore.
Right.
Do you think that that's something that that kind of keeps them at bay a little bit?
Well, again, forking has to do with the will of the community, right? Because after you have a fork, remember, I don't know, you know, you guys, I don't know how old you guys are, if you remember Bitcoin Cash, right?
Yeah, remember that, yeah.
So when Bitcoin Cash, you know, forked from Bitcoin, it was like, well, which one's Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
And the answer was, and I you go back, you see, I wrote about this, you know, whatever that happened, a couple, you know, seven years ago, whatever the split was, you know, and my answer was, Bitcoin is whatever the one that Coinbase calls Bitcoin on their website, right? Yeah. Because they were going to call one Bitcoin and the other Bitcoin other, right? And whichever they call Bitcoin, that's Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with the technology. It has to do with the nomenclature and where the energy goes.
Yeah. So also, wasn't there like a percentage of miners too that were like growing in one camp and then one was kind of dying off?
Yes. So and that can happen. That is a danger to the system. That is why we need diversity of, you know, of producers and diversity of networks and diversity of pools. And we are in danger of those, you know, of the consolidation of power, you know, to which could, you know, overtake the voice of the people.
Yeah. Yeah. But the people could always create their own Bitcoin, right? So well, you guys own that one now. This one's the real one. We're taking this.
The banks could tell us that the new Bitcoin is the one that they forked, and we could basically go like this and say, you know, we don't want that one.
Yeah.
When's the last time you used ETH Classic?
I actually tried to use it. It said 3 weeks to do a transaction. It was going to take me 3 weeks to send it. I was like, what am I doing right now?
You got to delete that part because I'm friends with those guys. That's funny.
Well, my last, very last question for you is this. So you talked about, you know, you look for the next thing. So what's that next thing for Ordinals for you? Like, what are you focusing on right now?
So right now, you know, we're running flat out at Ordinal Spot. Trying to support inscriptions and, you know, and make sure that we participate in the rune, you know, introduction and make sure that goes smoothly. Going forward, you know, again, we're still in the picks and shovels, right?
Yeah.
The market needs a better inscription service even than we have, right? It needs a better marketplace and discoverability and liquidity. The actual modality of how you inscribe and how you hold and transfer an ordinal is not acceptable at this point in time. It needs to be simplified to be, you know, simple, you know, input address, you know, put it in the mount and send, right? And you can't need to worry about whether you sent your inscription by accident when you paid for your piece of pizza, right? And so I think that we're, you know, right now we still have to be focused on picks and shovels. The next things that are going to come out that are going to be more interesting are going to be the marketplaces and DeFi solutions, which are going to depend on, you know, on finality and on the bells and whistles that we come up with, you know, in the Bitcoin world. I was at ETH Denver and I was at NFT.NYC. Over the last month. And I will tell you that at both those events, which are historically 100% Ethereum and EVM conferences, that Bitcoin was very well represented. I mean, impossible to ignore the fact that Bitcoin is very certainly taking a bite out of the EVM world. And so the question is, where does that equilibrium settle? And I think that we're still in the formation phase. I believe that there is a use for Bitcoin and the Bitcoin developments in economy. And I also believe that that the native scriptable nature of the EVM world is still superior to Bitcoin for actual use cases at this point in time. And so if you were to take a snapshot now, it would be Bitcoin as infrastructure upon which to keep growing the usability that's in the EVM world. And then the horse race is whether the Bitcoin world can develop concepts fast enough and stay in line with the Bitcoin concepts, and also, you know, eat more of EVM's lunch, I guess would be the word. And that's out to be said. And in the long run, the investors don't care, the users don't care. I don't care if my phone in my car is Android or iPhone. I care that when I sit down, it knows what I want and it just does it, and I'm not risking getting into an accident trying to find the gas station or change the music, right? And I don't really care which protocol it's using. And I think that that's where people are going to be when we get to mass adoption. And so the question is, what happens in those two different, in the Bitcoin and Ethereum societies to address people's needs in the future?
Yeah, I agree. All right, it's been absolutely amazing. We went way past what we wanted to, but it was actually amazing, man. I definitely want to give you some time to talk about OrdinalsBot a little bit, though, before we end. What can you tell us about OrdinalsBot and everything that they're building?
So OrdinalsBot is just an amazing bunch of people who really, you know, live, eat, breathe, and sleep ordinals. I was just at nyc.nft, you know, with Bruffstar and with Toby, and it was just so amazing to see the affection that the industry has for them, and that the trust, of parties of coming to OrdinalsBot and working out the technical aspects of how to do their inscription and how to create their marketplace and how to build the tools to access and manage their communities. And so to me, OrdinalsBot is A, hitting the ball out of the park right now in terms of inscriptions. We're somewhere north of 30% of all the inscriptions. We're starting to bring in the Ghostface Killa and all the different talent who are looking to be introduced to the community, and we're being used. OrdinalsBot is being used as a portal to help people go through and access these communities and create these products and solutions. And so I see OrdinalsBot as being hopefully a key player over the next 2 or 3 years, and to keep building out those essential pieces of infrastructure that are required for third parties to exercise their imagination and their creativity and build communities around technologies that just work, right? And the idea at OrdinalsBot is to keep simplifying the art of inscription, to be ahead of the curve in terms of how you can push the envelope for size and for quality and for liquidity and for simplicity, and then to add on other things that you would need to have, like a marketplace, like standardization, of input and output, to keep working, as we are, to create those tools that people need to rely on Ordinals without knowing that they're doing so, and in a way are able to have finality, transparency, and interoperability.
Amazing. And it seems like you guys have a really good partnership with some of these bigger miners, right? Like, I know you guys use Marathon Holdings and stuff. What can you tell us about that, about your your partnerships with them?
Well, that really goes to the fact that that Bruffstar and the team really understand the roadmap going forward, and that people are trusting them to use them as a guide to how to participate. So OrdinalsBot has become kind of like the underwriter's listing, like the UL tag, mm-hmm. On it, or Intel Inside. That if you have a problem, go to the OrdinalsBot team. They'll solve it with you, and you'll have a holistic, solution that just works, right? And so what's a nice validation of that is that people like Marathon Digital and other guys out there that are, the real world, the legacy world, who want to bend in and start using Ordinals, we've become their first stop and, their obvious choice, which I hope is a marketplace, is a market position that we're able to continue to cement.
That's awesome.
Amazing. Yeah, man, that was perfect. So this is kind of the part of the show. We kind of give you the stage. You can talk about anything you want if you have anything left. It's been absolutely amazing, James.
I think we covered it. I love you guys. And I really, this I have to say that I'm much I appreciate, you know, the respect and to have me on. You know, the one thing I'll just tell, I just have one thing to say, is two things. The first thing is, you know, my kids, I have 22 and 26 year old kids who are fantastic and very entrepreneurial. And they always come to me and ask me, how do I do this? And how do I do that? And I know I'm being a good parent because I can get them to roll their eyes. People think when they roll their eyes, when they roll their eyes, it's good because it means they didn't like what you said and they're giving you a hard time, but they heard it. That's why they're rolling their eyes. Yeah. So whenever they come to me with, how do I do this or how do I do that? The answer is always the same. And then they roll their eyes right after they ask the question, because it's always just start. Right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's beautiful about Ordinals and where we are right now in this world, is that if you have an imagination, you have an idea you want to bring forward, there's never been a better time in the history of mankind to be an entrepreneur, to be a dreamer, to be a builder, right? Because it's never been easier to get that in front of the mass market. So look at the technologies we're developing. Look at the self-sovereignty. Look at the ability to be yourself. And don't be afraid to try. The cost of failure is lower than it's ever been. And the availability of community to be successful has never been greater. So, you know, the world's falling apart and you can read the newspaper all day and go crazy. Or you could put your head down, think of something cool that you want to do, and go execute it. And I think that we live in this world where it's never been easier to do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing, man. Perfect. Perfect ending to a great interview. James, definitely want to have you back on again, man. I feel like I learned so much in this. I can't wait to go back and kind of grab a lot of your talking points from when I get to ask these questions, because it was almost perfect. You had me just sitting here like a kid in a classroom, like, man. So
yeah,
perfect.
Exactly. Like college.
I feel you guys should know I feel the same way about you and about the Ordinals. But I was at the NFT.NYC, you know, I walked around with Brubstar the whole show, and I have not learned that much in a week forever. I'm like, my mind was going crazy. I met you guys, Mr. Lucky. I met all these different guys who are building communities and doing the Bitbar guys. You know, it's just cool shit. And so, you know, I thank you. Thank you.
Awesome. We'll see you, James. Well, absolutely amazing. He's one of a kind, man. It was perfect. I already said everything I said about him. I want to make sure I said it to his face instead of saying it back here without I'm here. But man, that was perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I knew that that's how this interview was going to go. It was kind of like just soaking in all the information and knowledge that he had while trying to ask great questions. And I felt like we didn't even have to feel like we needed to add more, because this conversation was just flowing. Right. And these are my favorite kinds of conversations, you know? And so I'm definitely excited to see what Ordinals Bot has, you know, in the future. Like I said, we've had the opportunity to kind of, collaborate with them, work with them, with one of our mutual partners. And that was great. And I'm excited for the future of Ordinals. You know, if someone like him, which is always, you know, trying to forecast what's next and hot, and he's here, we're in the right place. So if you're watching this, you're in the right place. Just keep at it. Keep knocking on that door.
And I'm definitely going to keep in touch with James and just make sure I know what he's investing in next, because that could be something special. I'm going to be messaging him. Hey, man, what do you got? What are you looking at? Because he's someone who seems to be always on that forefront of the next big thing. And I think he's at it with Ordinals, and we're lucky enough to be in it as well. So, but that's the show, guys. We really appreciate you guys watching. Please like, he said this, please hit the subscribe button. Chasing my words here, but definitely check out OrdinRevolution.com. We have some of the best articles there. If you guys are looking for merch, we have that there. If you guys are going to Bitcoin Nashville, we have a 20% off coupon at the very top of the screen, and make sure you're wearing your Ordinals gear. If it's not from us, make sure from somewhere that show the maxis that we're Ordinals and that we're down there and that we mean something. But I think I hit on everything. I think that's the show.
Yep, that's it.
All right, see you guys.
Peace.
Ordinal Revolution. Let's go.